Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, broadcasting live from the East Eddy Ranch. We've got quite a show here for you tonight. There's so many things I want to cover first before we go on the show, so we wanted to talk about some of the events unfolding here at East Eddy. We just stepped out of an amazing session where we do a session where we work with the higher beings, and some of the ascended masters come in, some of the extremely advanced UFOs and ETs come in. I'd rather call them the greater family of man, but they're actually our ancient ancestors, and it's all tied together. So it was quite interesting. We had quite a group here, and I'm still buzzing from the energy. We had Mary Magdalene pop in and initiate everybody, and then Ezekiel came in right after that. And I know some of you say this is a little too outrageous. I don't know about this, but if you were there, you'd be saying the same thing. This was outrageous, and it was quite an event. You know, you can't deny the energies that are flowing to you and through you. But, you know, one of the things that usually end up with a big belly laugh when these energies come in, and to kind of get your frequencies up. But anyway, we're still buzzing from that session. There's so many things I'd like to cover. I really don't want to get into too much of the negative stuff, but it does need to be addressed. And recently we've been just barraged by these chemtrails. And at night, we had our night vision out, and we were seeing multi-leveled chemtrails, the thickest chemtrails I think I've ever seen. And there's some information. Now, Alex Jones had a neurologist on there recently that actually wrote the book on brain surgery and things like that, and very, very enlightened soul. And he talked about what's happening now to the brain and the brain plaque that's coming, that he's seeing even in teenagers now, where they're having severe memory loss and they don't know what's going on. And lo and behold, their brains are full of barium and aluminum oxide and all these heavy metals. All those little things that are being sprayed overhead that are raining down on the rest of humanity. So, you know, and then we've got these swine flu epidemics and all these other things. And you have to ask yourself, why is everybody getting the flu in the middle of summer here? You know, it's a little odd, you might say. Unless maybe it might be spread intentionally, or it could be raining down in some of these chemtrails, because they are finding some crazy biologicals in these. I could go over the list of the biologicals that they're finding raining down after some heavy spraying, but again, you know, it's not good. I mean, they're finding streptococci. They're finding all kinds of mycoplasms. They're mutants of molds and funguses and bacterias and viruses and just all kinds of things could have only been created in a laboratory. So basically, they found out the same thing with this swine flu. You can't get a human, a bird, and a swine flew all together in one package without doing it in a petri dish. It just doesn't happen. If you talk to any biologist, they'll give you the same information. So, you know, there's people making a lot of money on these flu shots, and what's in those flu shots is very disastrous, and that's what these neurologists and all these scientists are coming forward and have analyzed what's in these flu shots, and they're saying don't even go there, that the shot can be much more deadly than the flu itself. So anyway, that's my position on it. I'm not into, you know, I try to stay out of hospitals and courts as much as possible. Usually not a lot of good comes out of them. And, you know, I know they have their place in an emergency. If you break a leg or have a crash or an accident, you know, they are the place to go. But as far as healing modalities, you know, it's a big, you know, corporate structure that's capitalizing on disease, and most of the things they have at their disposal working within that system really aren't doing you too much good. As a matter of fact, they create dependencies and create severe problems later. So I'm all into food being your medicine, and keep your consciousness high, get the stress out of your life, and focus on love and joy and bliss until you become it. You know, get your frequencies above all this nonsense, and don't participate. You know, the bottom line is, you know, all these things are going on. There are people that are willing participants in their own demise, And it's time to wake up and smell the coffee and step out of this program and get on the bandwagon with this new world that's coming in, because this new world order is not going to happen that they're trying to create, and it's not a positive one. It's an enslaving world. So there's an old saying, man plans and God laughs. And basically these tyrants, these international banksters and all these people that are playing their games right now are going to ensure their own demise, and with the new frequencies coming in, it's going to accelerate their karma. Everything is going to be exposed. Even the Mayan prophecies talk about this, that, you know, there's the apocalypse is the great uncovering, and everything is going to be made known. So there's nowhere to go, and you can't run from your karma. And there's one little universal law they forgot, and it's called the universal law of action-reaction. And as you sow, so shall you reap. You know, it's very simple. No matter how big your ego is, everything comes home to roost, you know, so eventually. And that's where we're going with that. But anyway, enough said about that. There's a lot of things going on. Otherwise, there's some very intense things. For the local news, we just had a fire up here, and they got that out thanks to Mother Nature came in with a little assist and just dumped torrents of rain on this fire right to, we've had two fires right in the same spot. It's really interesting. But, you know, very near, right on Mount Adams, you know, very near the door that seems to open up and ETs come out on a regular basis, which is all on the site if you want to see that. If you go to eseti.org, you can see the UFO footage of the door opening on the mountain and all kinds of objects landing and morphing from 1 to 3 and you name it. We've had a lot of talk about the debunkers lately, and you know, basically right now with all of the UFO activity around the planet and the video that's available, there's basically two categories the debunkers fall into, and one of them is just complete ignorance, and the other one is total disinformation agents. I mean, there's no other space for these guys to fit in. So when, you know, they keep saying UFOs aren't here and they don't exist, they haven't done any research whatsoever. They don't want to do any research, or they're part of the disinformation game. And that's the bottom line. I mean, the ships are appearing everywhere around the world. Countries are unloading their files. Top military officials have all come forward, heads of the FAA. It's just overwhelming. Presidents, astronauts have all come forward. The information is there, and I'm sorry, Seth Shustak, head of SETI, it's just not working anymore. You're busted, you know, so give it up. You know, the more you try to cover this up and look for a radio signal out there, which they're probably not even using radios because they're traveling beyond light speed, so figure it out. You know, they're not going to, you know, come down here and buy a radio and a broadcast, you know, a little signal just so you can hear it. And we also know if you did hear it, we wouldn't hear it. So anyway, that's enough of that story. But you know, it's just beyond obvious. Now the debunkers are looking so bad, and the information they're coming up, you know, with when you have multiple witnesses, you have multiple cameras on an object, and the camera is doing things that are far beyond any terrestrial craft that we know of. We have a UFO. It's unidentified, it's flying, and it's up there. And if it doesn't fit into any categories of having red and green running lights or strobes, and it's just one brilliant light, and it's doing maneuvers beyond, you know, anything that we could do, you know, you have to come to the base conclusion that this is an unidentified flying object. It's not a plane. It's not a helicopter. You know, it's, you know, they don't morph from 1 to 3, and they don't make jumps, you know, that would slam anybody against the wall. You know, they don't make right angle turns at several thousand miles an hour and live to talk about it in a conventional craft. So, Anyway, enough said on that story. I can go on and on with the footage that we have. I mean, we've had multiple witnesses see ships come in as triangles, morph into a cube, and then into a cylinder, and take other shapes, and then morph back into a triangle and take off and make a nice right angle turn. So, Seth, put that in your pocket and figure that one out and get back to us, because we'd love to hear your description on how that could have been a meteor or a satellite or the space shuttle, which we hear all the time. And we don't have a NASA launch pad on Mount Adams. There is no landing facility there. This is not the space shuttle, as the debunkers keep trying to come up with, such as the ones on Fox News, saying that we're seeing the space shuttle or the meteors. You know, I haven't seen the space shuttle morph from 1 to 3 and land on Mount Adams, which after seeing that footage, that's what they came up with, is what we were shooting was the space shuttle. But you can see clearly the mountain above the footage. This thing is below the mountain. It's actually on the mountain. And so let's come up with something a little more original, you know, like, you know, there's so many different things. And be that as it may, talking about that, we do have a wonderful witness that works for a certain aeronautic company that we won't say online. And hopefully Steve is with us. And we want to bring Steve on to talk about his experience and what he saw here on Mount Adams. So hopefully, Steve, if you're online, we'll try to hook up with the field. We've got quite a few people here right now. Steve, are you with us?
Yes, James. Hello.
Hey, welcome to the show.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
So Steve, as far as your qualifications, you work for a major aeronautic firm here locally in the Seattle area.
Yes, I'd rather not give the name. However, I'll give a clue. It does rhyme with a sound effects that you hear in a cartoon. You know that spring noise when
yeah.
the Roadrunner jumps off the cliff and lands and makes like a boing noise?
It's kind of
like that, but I don't want to tell you the name of it.
Okay, that's good. Yeah,
that's
we don't want to mention
the
name over the air and get anybody in trouble.
That's right.
But, you know, we've had quite a few on the coast to coast. I brought in one triple PhD engineer from the same firm, and some people involved in Skunk Works, and two other engineers from the same firm that have all been here and had just amazing experiences and saw things that did not fit into any box they knew of. And these are people very involved in Skunk Works that know what we have and what we don't have. So, and I know you had one of these similar experiences, so I'd love for you to come on the show and talk about, you know, some of the things that you've seen here at the ranch.
Do I have more than 5 minutes?
Oh, you have as long as you want.
Okay, here goes. Well, my experience started back in 2005. I was at a club meeting where we had a guest speaker come in who is a UFO researcher. And what really tuned me in was when he said, the hot spot here in the state of Washington, and it probably on the western side of the U.S., is at Trout Lake. And I started taking notes, and he said, if you go there, you'll see some amazing things. Look towards Mount Adams. And then he mentioned James Gilliland. I took notes on that. And your website, James, yosetti.org. And I got really interested in it because this guy seemed really sincere. Mm-hmm. So I took the notes, and I planned on going camping there one day. So I gave him an email like a few weeks later. I said, what's a good time to go? And he said, just go there and keep looking up. So I was too shy at the time to call you or email you and ask, hey, can I camp on your property? You know, I didn't know what the deal was, even though I saw on your website that, you know, people are welcome. And I decided, well, I'll just camp, you know, at a campsite down the road. So my wife and I took the trek up here from Renton, Washington, and my wife was a bit reluctant because at the time she was a super skeptic, and we packed up the car and the Jeep, and she said, now what are we going to see? And I said, well, I was told by some sincere gentleman that we're going to see something spectacular. So she gave me the what I call the hairy eyeball look and the smirk. So we packed up the Jeep and we took off. This was back in August of 2005, and I believe it was around August 25th. It was kind of cute in a way, because on the way down I-5 going towards Oregon, every hour or so my wife would say, "Now, what are we going to see?" Like a little kid. And I would go in, you know, I don't know exactly, but this guy seems sincere, and I just have to act on it because I've read some things about this, and I'm curious. So sure enough, we made it down and found a campsite. And I won't go into what we saw on the first night because that wasn't as spectacular as the second night. So I'll go to the second night. And it was about 9 o'clock, and it was maybe 9:30, and it was a new moon, so the mountain was very hard to see. It wasn't lit up. So we found this right down the street about 2 miles from the Yosemite Ranch. We parked in a school parking lot, and within 5 minutes of getting out of the car, the Jeep, we're looking around, and my wife picked up something coming from the south, like out of Oregon, and she pointed at it. It was about 30 degrees above the horizon, and it was a white thing. It was a white glowing thing. It could have been an airplane for all I knew, but it looked rather bright. And she said, "Look at that." She goes, "Look." And I said, "Well, you know, it's going linear. It's not doing anything spectacular. You know, we have to assume that's an airplane. You know, the simple idea is what should surface first, that it, you know, explain it as something mundane, as an airplane." So right when I said it's not doing anything, you know, spectacular or wacky, it started to undulate up and down in a sine wave pattern. And I went, "Whoa, that's not an airplane." And it was really bizarre because it did this going north towards the mountain, and it did this right into the mountain. It probably stopped doing the undulation probably, I don't know how many miles before it landed on the mountain, about midpoint on the mountain. And my wife was freaking out, and I never saw her get this excited. And it actually landed, I'd say, midway on the mountain on the right side. And if it didn't land, it was stationary. It could have been hovering in front of the mountain for all I know. This mountain's about 12 miles away from that parking lot. And it was glowing white, and it was huge. I'd say it was the size of maybe the collar button off my shirt, held at arm's length. It would probably match the size of it. That's how big it was. Now, mind you, the mountain is approximately, from the ranch, it's 13 miles from that parking lot. It might be 12. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, a 747 flying at 7 miles high, 35,000 feet approximately, is the size of a pinhead at arm's length. It's not very big. You can barely make out the red and green running lights on the wingtips, okay? This thing that we saw, whatever it was probably almost twice that distance, and it was huge, and it stayed there on the mountain. It was bright, too. It was extremely bright. And all within, like, I don't know how many minutes, it was sitting there stationary on the mountain or just hovering off the mountain. Two little glowing orbs came out of it, less than half the size of that. It was a red one and a green one, came out the left and right side, and started circling around this, what I call a mothership. The reason why I call it mothership, my wife yelled out, "Look, it had babies." I mean, I never heard it. She said something like, "The mothership had babies," and I never heard my wife say mothership before, but that's what she blurted out. And my wife was going hysterical, and I wasn't believing what I was seeing. I'm thinking maybe I ate some magic mushrooms that were on a pizza a couple hours earlier, and I was going tripping from it or whatever. So I wasn't trusting myself, so I had to ask my wife, "What are you seeing right now?" She goes, "These glowing things are circling around at the big mothership. They're going in circles." And I said, "Thank you. Okay, you're confirming what I'm seeing." So I know I wasn't hallucinating because my wife was having the same hallucination, if you want to call it that. And I think
did
that's
she eat
unheard
the same
of.
Pizza?
Maybe she did. It had the same,
no, I'm just kidding.
The same trip. It could be. But she confirmed what I was seeing. So I figured, okay, I'm not going insane. Or we could be going insane or tripping together. I don't know. But anyway, my wife is just ecstatic. It's going nuts. And after these two little orbs, the green and red one, circled it several times, they shot back inside, and within a minute or so, this thing shot up from the middle of the mountain, vertical, a vertical climb, shot up to the top of the mountain and hovered above the peak, dead center on the peak, but above it, not on it, but hovering above it. And it illuminated even brighter. It just flashed, and it looked like the top part of the mountain got illuminated. So imagine what kind of energy had to come out of this to light up the top, the peak of the mountain. It did that, and then it just zipped away and from where it came from, but at a much faster rate. And I tell you what, I had electricity going through my body, and it felt like, because I was so excited about what I saw, I felt like I was floating off the ground, because I just felt totally aware and alive, and I had just electricity zooming through my body, and my wife felt the same way. And we had to talk about what we had just seen, and we confirmed everything we saw, described the undulation. We agreed on everything we saw, and I took notes, and I made a little documentary sheet describing what we saw, and I updated it recently. I left off the a few things. I think I called it, folks, this was not a weather inversion, and I changed the wording. I forgot what I had said, but I altered it a little bit because I gave a better description of the size of the object in the update. I gave the relative size with the analogy of the collar shirt button at arm's length. Mm-hmm. I didn't have it in the first one. So I decided to put something together, otherwise I might forget this incident, this experience, I call it. It was a life-changing experience. And what's interesting, my wife and I, almost every week, we talk about what we had seen, and we both agree that this was the most exciting thing we ever witnessed, ever, you know, either together or on our own through our whole life. And my wife, it changed her mind about, you know, there could be something going on out there that is beyond us. And all I could say is after we left there, we went back to the campsite, I could not sleep. I was so wired by what I saw. My wife couldn't sleep either. We stayed up all night in a tent and just talked about it and relived it. Talked about the colors coming out, the little orbs, and right now I'm reliving it, and I could feel the goosebumps coming, you know, off my arms and up and down my back. So I'm sorry if I'm getting too excited.
Yeah. No, I mean, I noticed that people, when they have these experiences, there is some kind of exchange, either a telepathic exchange or an energy exchange. Everybody has a different word for it, you know, and we know that, you know, there can be instant communication. That's just part of physics. But there is some kind of a communication that happens that goes along with witnessing the experience, and it is life-changing when it happens.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, my wife and I, we both felt that thing, whatever it was, that ship, did that for us. It knew we were there for them. We felt a communication. That it actually said, we're going to put on a show for you. This is for you. And another thing that makes me think that, not just from the feeling, is when I said that thing that was going linear about 30 degrees off the horizon, I said, well, we have to assume it's an airplane. Simple explanation, it's an airplane or an aircraft of some sort because it's not doing anything unusual. Then suddenly it broke into the sine wave undulation up and down. And I laughed and I said, that is no airplane, because airplanes cannot do that like that, and they're not allowed to. If passengers were on that airplane, they'd be like, I think you had said this before, they'd be bouncing off the ceiling if a ship was to go up and down like that, or an airplane was to go up and down like that.
Well, what would happen on an ascent, like the one that you saw, you witnessed from the bottom of the mountain to, how much distance do you think that covered in that ascent, and how fast do you, I mean, I know these are just, you'd probably have to make a guess, but I'm just wondering what that would do to your average pilot sitting in any kind of a plane or a helicopter to have an ascent like that. What would they be experiencing?
Well, I did some calculations on my own, not knowing the total vertical climb. And I was conservative. I picked 3,000 feet, but I really think it was more like 4 or 5. Mm-hmm. So I did the math to figure out the average speed of that climb from the stop from the start point to the acceleration to the stop at the top of the mountain. So we have a point at the beginning where it's just stationary, accelerating and deaccelerating and then stopping. So the average speed I figured out to be something like between 700 and 900 miles per hour. And that's average speed. Don't forget, there was an acceleration and a deacceleration. So somewhere in there it was even faster. And it had to accelerate at a quick rate. Within 3 seconds, it made it to the top of the mountain. My wife and I went back and forth. We said it was probably maybe five. She said, no, I think it was three. We weren't ready for this. You know, if I would have known they were going to show up, I would have had my stopwatch ready and and clocked it and had the cameras on and everything. But anyway, we discussed it, and we both agreed it was probably 3 to 4 seconds. And it might have been 4,000 feet, the vertical climb, or five, but I picked three, and it's still pretty amazing that it accelerated like that. And I would think if there was a human being in there, they would be a pancake or just be flattened and turn to soup or something, because I don't think a human could take those G-forces without paying a big price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And, you know, we've seen so much of that here with things, you know, moving, stopping, and things that look like a meteor, and they're coming in so fast, and then they level out and just keep going down the horizon.
Oh, yeah.
And make a course correction. So it's obvious, you know, something moving that fast with that kind of force, they have to have their own gravity, you might say, on the inside, that to where they're not affected by those speeds and those turns or those angles, you might say.
I don't know how they do it. I just don't understand how they can stop suddenly and make a right-hand turn doing thousands of miles an hour. And when I was here last year, I witnessed what I thought were satellites going by overhead. And I'm watching this satellite, if you want to call it that, and it's just going linear like any satellite. And then suddenly it looked like it just made a sudden arc. It was going due north. It was probably a polar satellite, which I thought. It was going due north and suddenly broke off and went east. And I'm thinking, wow, I don't think that was a satellite.
Yeah.
And I had been out in the field where you can tell where some of the skeptics show up and people are getting excited about what could be a satellite, and these guys are thinking, that's a satellite, what's the big deal? And then one time when this happened, it was the same type of thing, but I believe this one was going from the north to the south, and people are getting excited, and suddenly it made this right-hand turn, a right-angle turn, a hard turn, and went east. And I heard one of the skeptics say, what the F was that? I think it rocked their world, because they were expecting to see this thing go linear, the whole from one horizon to the other, and it certainly did not. And it made me smile a little bit when I heard somebody make a comment about that.
Yeah, we had, I remember one guy was here at the ranch, and he was, same thing, he was a scientist, and he says, you know, he goes, when I see one of these things go back and reverse course and go back the other way, and he goes, then I'll be a believer, you know, that it's not a satellite. Mm-hmm. And within probably 3 seconds of him saying that, this one reversed course and went back the other way. And it just freaked him out. And he said, you know, he goes, he could not wrap his mind around that, because he said, they're either monitoring us, listening to us, or he said it did exactly what, you know, I, you know, needed or whatever, or kind of, and he it just, not only did it freak him out that it stopped and reversed course and went back the other way, it freaked him out that it did it right within, you know, 3 seconds after he said that. And he just, it just totally changed his life. He could not wrap his mind around that event. And then I had to explain to him that, look, they scan. When they fly over, they're scanning us on the ground, and they're extremely telepathic. It doesn't matter where they are, because there's instant communication on their side. And they know exactly what your thoughts are and what you're thinking, especially when you're looking at them and projecting that thought towards them. They're going to pick it up and give you an experience that you know, that's outside your box, you might say.
do you think that could have been swamp gas or Venus having some type of refracted light coming off it?
Yeah. Well, I know that you've been kind of doing battle with some skeptics, and one in particular. I don't know if you want to mention his name. I'm not even sure his name, but I saw some of the email exchanges, and I thought it was ironic. It was so funny what he said. That first of all, he knows this is a ranch, and
oh, yeah.
So what he said was, well, is there a barn on the ranch? Because if there is a barn on the ranch, what he's doing is he has high-tech laser equipment and remote-controlled objects that he's launching from this barn, and that totally negates anything you're seeing there. But the problem was he was assuming that there would be a barn here, which there is no barn on the ranch.
Right.
And so he tried to set it up that way as to be, oh, yeah, well, if there's a barn, that's... And so that blew that story out. It was amazing little antics that they come up with. But I know he came up with a couple other really choice ones, too. Do you want to touch on those?
Oh, yeah. First, the barn one with the special effects that you could be using Hollywood special effects.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a hoot because I think I sent you an email asking you... Since you're in the Hollywood special effects, what are you doing at Trout Lake? You belong in Hollywood, taking Steven Spielberg's job away from him, along with George Lucas.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it was kind of funny that this guy went on, and then he said, you know, it's really hard for anyone to go out there and document what's going on because it's very hard to get to. Yeah, I think he might think you live on the top of the mountain or halfway up the mountain or something.
Uh-huh.
And so I emailed him back and I said, I've been going there since 2005. I've been there at least 10 times, maybe 11. And the ride there is very scenic. All the roads are paved. I never busted an axle going there. And I have had no trouble getting there. And nobody else has, so I don't know what the deal is with James's ranch is very hard to get to because of roads or whatever, and I don't know where he got that from. But I guess it's a good excuse not to go here and try to verify and actually see what could be happening here.
And yeah, we run into that all the time. I call them armchair investigators.
Oh, absolutely.
They throw out all these just ridiculous statements to debunk it or discredit it or whatever, but they won't get out of their little armchair and get their butts up here. And, you know, we have major reporting centers right here locally that have never been to the ranch and refuse to come, and they have an open invitation, and they never take us up on it. And as a matter of fact, they've done everything they can to discredit us and actually moved sightings. I mean, there was an elk abduction, and they moved the location of it and said it was nowhere near Mount Adams, and it was on Mount Adams where this happened. And they had a ship come in and pick an elk up with 14 tree planters witnessing this event. And it grabbed this elk, and it brought it up into the ship, and it couldn't quite get it up into the ship. It got halfway across the ravine, and it had to stop and turn around and come back the other way in front of them again, because they couldn't get the elk up into the ship. It was really interesting. And then they finally got it up in the ship and took off, and with 14 witnesses. And, you know, there's so many other... there's an engineer that was sent out here, and she gave a wonderful report on what she saw, and she said without a doubt there is activity there, and that report was changed to say that, you know, that it was only meteors and satellites. And then we have her original report, and one of these UFOs was a huge, like a goldish orange colored ship, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger and came right towards her. And I mean, she hit the dirt, you know, and it made it very clear that this was not anything. And then it stopped and then backed up. And, you know, the things that she saw were very clearly not meteors or satellites or any conventional craft, and she wrote that up in the book. And she actually stated that she had the J-Tracker and Heavens Above sights, and she said, look, nothing was in the air over Trout Lake at the time. There were no visible satellites, and the objects that we saw and what they did were spectacular, and all those reports were changed. So it's just amazing the depth of misinformation and the people in these supposedly high positions of you know, reporting UFOs, and even within the UFO community and the people on the boards of these communities who decide who speaks at the conferences and things like that, the level of military and disinformation is just off the scale, and even ones that tout no New World Order actually have Council on Foreign Relations members on their board, you know, which colonels and things like that. And so you have to start wondering, you know, where is the real information going to be coming out? Where can you get information of the highest integrity, and that's you know, not going to be not going to sell out? And basically, that's us. We're one of the few people that have the overwhelming evidence, but we're probably one of the most censored groups on the planet right now.
Mm-hmm. It looks like things are starting to change. I just looked at the 10 videos on YouTube from the National Press Club 2009. If you do a search in Google, YouTube. Type in National Press Club 2009, and you'll get a list of these videos from very credible speakers. You've got the astronaut Edgar Mitchell, who's been on the moon. I think he was the sixth man on the moon, and he's talking about the cover-ups. You have a few others on there who have very good credentials, and I recommend to people to check out Press Club videos for 2009. There were reporters in the audience taking notes and asking very good questions. And this National Press Club conference or meeting was actually in Washington, D.C., which, you know, guess who's right next door to that? So maybe disclosure is imminent. It's very possible.
Yeah, I don't see... Now, this is what just blows me away, basically, is that, you know, two things. One, you know, that form of insanity is to do the same thing over and over expecting a different result. And, you know, we keep voting these guys into office, these same guys, and we expect, you know, that, and they tout transparency, and we are going to be, you know, honest, we are here for the people and everything else, but then... You know, you see things like the chemtrails, and you see this UFO cover-up, and you see all these things, and you're going, where is the transparency? Where is the truth? You know, where is the service to others here? And it's just not there. And I've always felt that the only way that's ever going to kind of come about is through the hearts and minds of the people. It's not going to come through religions. It's not going to come through governments. The only way we're ever going to have universal peace and, you know, the levels of integrity that we need to get back on track is by the very people itself rising up, getting educated, and demanding it, because it's just not there right now. It's not happening on that level.
Well, I think we need more of these armchair critics to get out of their chair and do some research on this. And the reason why they stay in the armchair is because it expends a lot more energy to get up out of that chair and start looking into this. It's so much easier to sit back in the chair and lean back and stay there. And I think another reason is that there's a thing called selective exposure, where you won't accept anything else because your realm that you made for yourself fits into this mold only. For instance, a lot of these physicists are hanging on to Newtonian physics only. And they feel it doesn't fit in the mold of F equals MA. So it can't be. But then you've got these new physicists out there like Dr. Michio Kaku, who came up, he's a co-founder of string theory and quantum physics and other things. And he's telling these Newtonian only physicists to open your minds. You know, we are a very new solar system compared to those other systems out there that are millions of years ahead of us. So if we progressed a lot in the last 100 years, think of the Wright brothers to now, our technology went a long way in just 100 years, and those other systems out there are millions of years ahead of us, and Einstein talked about wormholes and shortcuts. Michio Kaku explains that, how they're shortcuts and how they could work, the theory behind them. We need more people, especially the Newtonian-only physicists, to open their minds and accept other possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need to get him on the show. I know he talked about other dimensions, and he made it very clear. He said, you know, trying to use a radio signal to find out if there's life elsewhere, he felt was just pretty barbaric, and he said, we really should be looking in other dimensions. And I thought that was amazing coming from him that, you know, a man of his caliber saying, look, these ships are popping in from other dimensions and other times and things like that. That's what we need to look for, even more so than using our dinosaur technology to establish the fact that UFOs are here. And you know, there's one other thing I wanted to cover, too, is that now this is amazing. In all the Vedic scriptures, they talk about the ships, you know, the physical ships, the energy ships, the light ships, their armaments. They even have directions on how to build one. There's so much ancient information. All the church frescoes all over Europe have UFOs in them, and it's always been a part of our history and our culture. But the past 60 years, that's been sanitized and removed, seems like after Roswell, and they established the giggle factor and made this all like, you just don't talk about it if you want to be part of social consciousness or society anymore. What's amazing, but if you go back and look at before this past, you know, Roswell and things like that, that it was open, it wasn't taboo, and there's a long, long history of UFO activity and encounters with our civilization that impacted us greatly, and if you just do the research, it's all there. So I always wonder why we're waiting for, you know, SETI or these other groups to tell us UFOs exist when they have a long, long history of, you know, sticking their head in the sand and not doing any research and not accepting the undeniable fact that whole countries are now releasing their files and everybody with a video camera has been out there filming them. It's all over YouTube and, you know, awesome footage. And top officials are coming out. FAA administrators, you know, the head of the FAA, top military officials, colonels, all these people have all blown the lid off of this. But you still have these guys out there just saying it's not real, that they're the debunkers and the disinformation people. And I think, you know, somebody needs to, you know, put their feet to the fire on all this and just say, what's up with that? Give me a rational explanation, or stop with the disinformation and the pure ignorance. You know, give me some rational explanation on why you're holding on to the precept that, you know, UFOs, that you haven't seen one yet, they don't exist, they haven't come to Earth, because they've always been here on the planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you had mentioned the interdimensional travel that Michio Kaku had mentioned there's at least 11 dimensions in front of us, and we just can't see them, but they're there. It's a theory, you know, and not everybody has to believe that, but you have to consider that it's very possible. And what's interesting is Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who was hired by the Air Force to be an advisor for Project Blue Book, he was a total skeptic in the very beginning. And then he started noticing the cover-ups by the Air Force, because every time he wanted to interview one of these military pilots who had a ship or a UFO buzzing their cockpit and doing these amazing maneuvers at high speed and right-angle turns, every time he wanted to talk to one of these pilots, the Air Force said, no, don't talk to them. Don't do that. He goes, but I have to. I need some data points from credible sources. No, you don't need to talk to them. And then this went on and on, and then he said, look, I can't do my job. You know, I'm a scientist. I need to get good data points from credible witnesses. And I think one of the answers he got back, to paraphrase, was, do you like your job? And he said, yeah. And so he realized what they were doing. He liked the money he was making through by the Air Force, and he realized that if he was to do this, you know, go forward and interview these military pilots, he could lose his job. So he had to hush up and just do wing it without doing it properly. And I'm reading his, one of his books right now. I just can't think of the title of it. And he documents all these Project Blue Book reports that he investigated, and the Air Force's explanation of what these things were. And what's more interesting than the reports is after every report, Dr. J. Allen Hynek makes these sarcastic comments, and they are really funny. Because you could sense the anger in him, and I've seen videos of him on the internet, on YouTube, where he's really getting upset with what's going on, because he had to, you know, tell people, oh, what you're seeing is swamp gas or Venus and all this. And he finally turned around and admitted that there's something going on, and what he said, actually sent two teams out here to the area east of Mount Adams, the Toppenish area. Mm-hmm. Back in 1971, he had two teams at least a mile or so apart from each other, and they said, let's focus on this part of the sky by Mount Adams. And these balls of light at the time, that's what they called them, I guess the Yakima lights is another term, showed up and started doing these weird maneuvers. One team saw them, and the other team looking in the same area didn't see them. So that is really strange that that occurred. And Dr. J. Allen Hynek finally made a comment. I don't know if it's because of the Toppenish event that happened, but his comment that I had read was, you know, they're probably here, but I'm not really sure they're nuts and bolts ships. In other words, could be interdimensional.
Mm-hmm. I noticed there were several things that they kept playing with them over there, and they would put all their equipment out and everything, and they'd be waiting, nothing would happen, and then they'd start putting their equipment away, or they'd go down the mountain, all of a sudden they'd get a call from the fire towers or whatever, hey, they're here, they're back, you know, ships are back, and they'd run up there, and then they're gone again, you know, and then they'd go back down, and all of a sudden the ships would come back, and they were doing selective viewing, and we've seen that here where they can choose who sees them and who doesn't see them, and they can also open up a window, you might say, to people, and I've used this example several times because we had about 10 or 11 people in a row, you know, quite a large group here, and some were seeing these ships like, you know, they're blinking, you know, and stopping and blinking on and off and doing all kinds of things on the mountain, and one group on the far left would see them, and the other of us, we couldn't see him, but the camera was actually seeing them, and I was filming it at the time, and you can hear everybody, okay, you know, one group on the end says, okay, no, they're gone, and then the people in the middle go, no, we see them, we see them now, they're blinking, they're doing all kinds of maneuvers and everything, and the other on the end that used to see them saying, no, they're gone, there's nothing there, I don't see anything, and then all of a sudden they stopped, and the people in the middle go, okay, they're gone, yeah, they're gone now, we don't see them anymore, and then the people on the right side started seeing them. So, and then the other two people in the middle and the end on the left side were saying, no, you know, there's nothing there. We don't see them. So they were actually creating a window and allowing certain people to see them and certain people not. And I know actually Jay-Z Knight talks a lot about UFOs and the brain and how we actually see with our brain, because our eyes are picking up billions of bits of information, but our brain is choosing what's useful to us and what we need to, you know, to get through the day, you might say. So it seems over and over and over again that the scientists now are realizing that if you say, I'll believe it when I see it, is incorrect, because it's better to say, you know, I'll be open to the belief, or I'll make a space for that so I can see it, and then you can see it, because, you know, it just, your brain just doesn't function that way.
Some type of filtering mechanism is being used there, and I have no idea how that's working.
Yeah, I think it's sometimes, you know, our own filters, and other times it's they've chosen, you know, who can see them and who can't. And I've seen people side by side staring at these ships doing all kinds of things, and one person just can't see it. You know, they've chosen not to have that experience, and so they, it's like, not there. You know, it's like when they did those experiments for the cats, and they raised all those kittens, you know, one in a room with horizontal bars and one with room and vertical bars, and then they switch rooms on them. And the cats couldn't see in the vertical room that were raised in the vertical room. They couldn't see the horizontal bars, and they just slammed right into them because they weren't a part of their reality. And same thing with the other one. So they've shown, you know, by our conditioning and some things are just not part of our reality, and we don't see them until we smack our head into them, basically. You know, it's kind of interesting. You know, but, yeah, there's been so many experiments, you know, along those lines that Stanford Research has a lot of experiments along those lines that show pretty clearly that we do see with our brain, and we choose, you know, what our reality is versus our reality choosing us. So is there any other, I know you've seen quite a few other things. Do you want to talk about any other experiences you've had here?
Yes, there was another remarkable experience, no landing on the mountain. My wife did come with me again 2 years ago, at least twice to the ranch here. But she got spoiled because she saw the grand bazaar or whatever when we saw the landing on the mountain. It's like winning the lotto to see that happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And to see these little baby ships come out of the mothership. So she thought every time we'd come here, we'd see that same exact thing happen again. She was expecting that. So we'd be out in the field. You know, I wouldn't take my wife fishing because she'd want to, after an hour or so, go home or go to another fishing hole or whatever.
Or throw just some dynamite in there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She probably wants to throw in some dynamite, yeah. But so we're out in the field, and after an hour or so, she's getting a little chilled, and she does, you know, I bring an extra blanket. No, I want to go to bed. You know, she didn't see anything. And sure enough, within a half hour of her going back to the tent to retire for the night, this one was really cool. I'm looking at the Big Dipper. It was off to the left, out in the western sky this time of night. And I look over, and I see an extra star in the Big Dipper right next to the end star in the handle. And it was brighter than any of the stars in the Big Dipper. I had my green laser with me, and there's probably 30 people in the field at least. I pointed my green laser at that star, and I said, "Hey, people, that star there does not belong there." And I didn't get much of a reaction. I pointed it out. And then it started to move along the handle of the Big Dipper, and that's when the crowd reacted. It just oohed really loud. And we followed it. We watched it go down the handle of the Big Dipper and stop almost next to this next star in line. And it stopped there and pulsated a little bit and then gradually faded out. And I'm certain that was not a satellite because it was stationary for at least a minute, okay? Then accelerated, and then, you know, and then went to a steady speed, and then stopped again. And I don't know of any satellites that can do that. So what that was, I really can't say. It was a UFO. I can't explain what it was or identify it, but it was really unusual.
Yeah, not to mention the massive power-ups when they come over and pulse everybody in the field. Those are fun as well. We had four huge ones. It's on the website. Come in at the last conference, and Renato Longato actually filmed them as they came in, and one after another came in. One was kind of a bluish, the other one was more purple, and then one was gold. So here you have four massive ships coming in, powering up over the group, and it's all on YouTube. And to me, you know, when you have evidence like that with that many witnesses and on film, it's pretty hard to deny that, you know, they're here and they are interacting with us.
I haven't seen those videos. I'll have to check them out.
Yeah, they're on the website. Just go to the website. It says four UFOs. Or type in ESETI four UFOs on YouTube, and it should pop up, and you can see them.
Okay.
But, you know, unfortunately, we're out of time. I can't thank you enough, Steve, for coming on the show and giving us your expertise, your expert witness there. And, unfortunately, we're out of time, so... Again, thanks for coming on the show and being a friend to ESETI and join us for these amazing adventures. All right. Well, this is James Gunn with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening, and we're taking it out to the field, hopefully to have some more of those amazing experiences. Anyway, have a great evening, and check out our website for all the upcoming events. We've got some self-mastery classes coming up. We have an ambassador training class, and it's all on there. It's eseti.org. Might as well pick up a few books and videos at the same time. Anyway, have a great evening, and we'll see you next Saturday. Good night.